Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges. September 11th, 2009, the Norris Group hosted I Survived Real Estate 2009. In this critical final quarter, the Norris Group assembled a Gold Star panel of accomplished industry specialists to discuss the impact of seismic economic shifts, head-scratching regulations, challenging legislation, and the accelerated pace of opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds for this unique event supported the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the Business Press, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronsgeist, Invest Club for Women, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for the website iSurvive2009.com, JK Short Sale, Entrust California and Hugh Broma, the Nixon Library, NVT Productions, the National Flip and Fix Network, and White House Catering. Visit iSurvive2009.com for information.
Our next speaker is Rick Sharga. Rick joined Realty Track in 2004, where he is responsible for brand management, corporate positioning, public and investor relations, and marketing communications. As one of the country's most frequently quoted sources on foreclosures and mortgage and real estate trends, Rick has appeared on virtually every TV show in America many times, every day. So he has really quite an influence on what people think about the market. And in his spare time, Rick is pursuing a black belt in Taekwondo. So when we get up into a panel here, don't mess with us. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
People are interested in foreclosures, so let's just kind of get into the meat of this. Foreclosure activity, you probably notice, has increased. We've been doing our monthly U.S. foreclosure report since January of 2005, and since January of 2005, you go back year over year, we've had 43 consecutive months where this year's foreclosure numbers were higher than last year's foreclosure numbers. 43 months in a row. We don't see that ending until sometime in 2011. 2009, July, was the biggest single month we've ever recorded in terms of foreclosure activity. Over 361,000 U.S. households received a foreclosure notice just in the month of July. Let me put this in perspective for you, because Aaron told me that Chris and I were supposed to set the tone for all the solutions that are going to come up on stage after us. 2005 was the last year we saw anything resembling normal levels of foreclosure activity. And the good folks at the Mortgage Bankers Association will tell you that about 1% of all first and second loans will wind up in foreclosure in a normal marketplace. So in 2005, we had about 500,000 households receive a foreclosure notice. We had about 100,000 REOs, about 100,000 bank repossessions. We had 75,000 in July. So when you're wondering why it's taking so long to get things done, when you're wondering why you're not seeing these properties come to market as quickly as they are, keep this in mind. We're dealing with foreclosure activity levels that are six times what they would be in a normal market. We're dealing with REO levels that are 10 times what they would be in a normal market. The people responsible for managing these assets are simply overwhelmed. Ask yourself how many loan servicers, how many banks you know that have staffed up 10x over the last 4 years. And that's one of the real problems. And by the way, the rules keep changing. And it's really difficult for these folks to stay on top of all that. And then we have the courts and the legal system trying to help the situation by creating moratoria and other legislative delays that do a really good job of delaying the inevitable. And while the intention is honorable, trying to let people stay in their houses longer, what we're actually doing is seeing the unintended consequences of extending the housing downturn. Because properties that should have foreclosed on 2 years ago are now just hitting the process. So it's kind of a mess. And this is what it's looked like. This is like my son's growth chart. We notice that every time he puts on a pair of pants that used to fit. But if you look at 2005 at the left and 2008 at the right, you can see that we finished last year with 2.3 million households receiving a foreclosure notice in 1 year. And that was off a base of about three million individual foreclosure filings that went out across the country. Record levels of foreclosure activity, pretty much no matter how you cut it. California's growth was even more rapid, and California at any point in time can account for as much as a third of a month's foreclosure activity. So for better or worse, we're ground zero when it comes to foreclosure activity. REO activity continues to increase. Up until the last 6 months, REO activity had outpaced all other foreclosure activity. So the growth rate in terms of bank repossessions was actually happening at a faster level than overall foreclosure activity. It's now lagging behind. So we're actually seeing a lot more churn in the early stages of foreclosures. We're seeing a lot more delays in the final implementation. About a third of properties scheduled for foreclosures on a monthly basis are being delayed at the auction for interminable periods of time. There's a case in Cleveland where a homeowner actually got arrested for failure to pay taxes on a house that he thought had been foreclosed on 6 months earlier. Because the bank started the process, decided they didn't want any more properties, decided not to pursue the foreclosure. By that time, the homeowner had moved out. That's how broken the system is right now. There's also, and Chris alluded to this, there's also a shadow inventory of about 400,000 to 500,000 REOs that have been taken back by the banks, but not yet processed and put back onto the market for sale. Variety of reasons for this. Variety of reasons for this, ranging from title issues to repair issues to redemption laws to eviction problems, all over the place, and then that sheer volume of inventory. But those properties are sitting on the sidelines. And God forbid the banks decided one day to flood the market with them. That won't happen, but they're there, and we're going to have to get through those before we get back to normal. This is an almost impossible chart to read, which is why I like it up here. I can make it say anything I want it to, and you can't tell. But basically, that yellow line is REOs. The blue line is initial notices of default. The kind of purplish line is the auction. So those are the three phases of foreclosure. And you can see through last year, the number of REOs far outpaced the increases year over year compared to the other two categories. Then we had a bunch of industry-wide moratoria hit at the same time. And look what happened to the REOs. Now we're seeing a lot more activity year over year in terms of growth of initial foreclosures and auctions and much slower processing of REOs. We have two problems hitting at the same time. We have a concentration continuing in states like California, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, so forth and so on, driven by early overvaluation problems exacerbated by bad lending practices. And 60% of all the foreclosure activity is in about six or seven states. We also have now, on top of that, a wave of unemployment-related foreclosures, places that hadn't been foreclosure hotspots like Idaho and Utah, Fayetteville, Arkansas. And this is what it looks like. I mean, this is like a really bad case of measles going across the country. And the darker the red, the more the foreclosure activity. If I'd showed you this a year ago, you would have seen a lot of activity on the West Coast and the Southeast, a little bit around Michigan and Ohio, but you can see that the problem continues to spread. So where are we going? Really, really quickly, because I got the high sign here. We're going to be seeing a hangover from 2008 continuing through 2009. Delayed foreclosures, that shadow inventory. There's about $60 to $100 billion worth of Alt-A and option arm loans that Chris talked about. They're going to be resetting this year early. They're going to probably default, and again, according to MBA numbers, they've been defaulting at numbers worse than subprimes when they've been resetting. The big wave of those doesn't hit until about the second quarter of next year. Unemployment is probably going to pass 10%, depending on which economist you talk to, and I think this is a number probably from Chris, but you're going to see one new foreclosure action for every 6 to 10 jobs lost. We've lost 7 million jobs since the beginning of the recession, and we're not done losing them yet. And that's going to drive foreclosure activity at high levels through the third quarter of next year. This chart shows you basically the comparison to the unemployment rate, which is the blue line, versus foreclosure activity. And you can see when unemployment started to kick up, we went from high levels of foreclosures to ridiculously high levels of foreclosures. This is bad, Chris, because usually the economist gets to do the boring charts and the marketing guy gets to do fun stuff. So I don't know how we traded roles here. This is a new one. This shows you personal bankruptcy filings compared to foreclosures. Foreclosures, again, being the bars and bankruptcy levels, going from what had been a low mark after the Bankruptcy Reform Act was passed to now we're talking about setting new record levels of personal bankruptcy filings and how that tracks into foreclosures. If you want a reverse chart, we can take a look at price appreciation. And as the level of foreclosure actions have gone up, prices have dropped. This is, I believe, the Case-Shiller report. But you are seeing a turn. You are seeing a stabilization. And I believe foreclosure activity actually is contributing a little bit to that in a bizarre way. We are seeing that some markets probably overcorrected. You go to Stockton, California, Las Vegas, Nevada, Phoenix to a certain extent. You're seeing multiple bids on bank-owned properties coming back off the bottom. So the markets have established a new sense of value. And we're also seeing that foreclosure properties today are probably worth about 10% more than they were a year ago. So even though the discount levels are still very, very high, the prices are coming up from a higher base. Basically, no matter which chart we use, you're going to see NAR numbers, you're going to see California Association of Realtor numbers. They're all showing basically the same thing. As the number of foreclosures go up, the price points go down. We are starting to see a little bit of a turnaround. This is inventory numbers. Obviously, as there are more and more bank homes hitting the market, the inventory levels will go up. That drives prices down, keeps more pressure on prices, makes the opportunities for you there as investors. So that's not a bad thing. We've got to watch housing starts. I've been to a couple of housing conferences where the builders have said, if we don't keep new housing starts between 2 and 300,000 new units a year for the next 3 years, we're not going to get the inventory balanced. Right now we're running at rates that suggest we could be at about 5 to 600,000. Too much inventory for the marketplace that's out there. I've never gone through this this fast. And we track our numbers against the Mortgage Bankers Association numbers on a quarterly basis because we think they've been the gold standard for a number of years. One of the things we noticed was a problem toward the end of last year is their delinquency rates were running at a faster pace than our foreclosure activity rates. That told us that there was a flood of pressure building up behind the gates. And for the first time toward the end of that last year, if you take a look at that blue line, you can see that the delinquency rates were shooting up at very high levels. And we saw the dam burst this spring. Almost done, guys. Similarly, if you take a look at the MBA's foreclosure rates, which are the red line compared to our rates, you can see that pretty standard run-up. And this is what the MBA counts as both homes entering foreclosure and the foreclosure inventory. Neither of those trends appears to be going in the right direction from an economic standpoint, but at least they're consistent. And this is a little troubling. The green line is, and Chris alluded to this briefly too, we're at record levels of delinquencies on loans. So if you add up all the properties, all the loans that are delinquent and in foreclosure, that's the green line. And you can see that even though we're talking about record levels of foreclosures, we've broken records 3 times in the last 6 months, the number of foreclosures is not keeping pace with that. So there's still probably a buildup yet to hit. We've just increased our projections for the year. We believe that this year will end with about 3.4 million U.S. households receiving a foreclosure notice. That'll break last year's record by quite a bit. We think option arms are going to reset at record levels next year. Unemployment's going to continue to drive things. Loan modification programs, even the ones the administration has pushed out, will not solve either of those problems. Because the option arms are typically going to be on properties that are upside down. There's no stipulation for principal balance reductions on those loans, which is a problem for those loans. And it's hard to get a loan modification if you don't have a job. Foreclosure activity, we believe, will stabilize. It's going to peak next year, we think. Probably stabilize and start to slow down sometime in 2011. We won't see normal churn levels until about 2012, and we're going to have REO inventory through 2013. So I've just given you about a 45-minute session in 12 and a half minutes. Appreciate your time. And we'll now turn it back over to your regular sponsor.
Okay. Our next speaker is John Young. John's experience in the real estate and home building industry extends for over 30 years. He and his partners at Young Homes have been responsible for building over 3,500 homes in the Inland Empire. His early career was spent as a successful sales representative and real estate broker. He later operated a residential mortgage company. He has served his building profession at numerous levels. Besides acting as the current vice president of the California Builders Association, he also serves on the board of the National Association of Home Builders. John, we welcome you to our podium.
Thank you, Bruce. You know, it's nice to be here tonight because usually I'm at meetings where there's such a downer, and you guys have a lot of passion. I've been a home builder for most of my life, and the last 3 or 4 years when I go to our association meetings, there are few and few builders around, and those people that are in the room are not feeling too good about their business. It's not that much fun when you reduce your staff and have to let a lot of people go. My goal tonight is twofold, and that's first to deliver what the California Building Association is doing to improve the playing field for the home building industry in California. And my second is to give you a little flavor of how home builders are continuing to build homes here in Southern California. And I'm a builder in the Inland Empire, and I'll give you a little bit of history of what we're doing and how we're continuing to sell some product today. Without a doubt, California home builders industry has been hit extremely hard by this recession. But just to give you a little example of how hard, consider for a moment that even though the population estimates forecast California's need for housing at 230,000 units, and that's a very debatable number as been spoken here earlier tonight, this year we think we're going to do about 40,000 units. And that's single family, multifamily, all new construction. And that's the lowest amount of new starts since the early 1950s. Coupled with the fact that in 2004, we saw a 15-year high of nearly 213,000 units built. And you can see that causes a big problem. In just 5 years, new home starts have plummeted 80%. With sales bottoming out and prices in a free fall, many of my home building friends have gone out of business. And most of them have cut back significantly, including our company. History demonstrates over and over when the housing market is healthy, the economy does well here in California. And when the housing industry does bad, the economy does bad. In addition to devastating industries depending on the housing industry, causing large-scale job losses, this 80% reduction in new home starts has enormous ripple effect, resulting in huge reductions in tax revenue, normally generated by new housing for local and state coffers. According to various economic analyses, the construction of one single-family home generates from anywhere from 2 to 3 jobs, roughly $330,000 in economic benefit, and about $16,000 in state tax revenue and $3,000 in local tax revenue. If the housing market does not get better, the state will not get better, and the economic misery will linger. To that end, the principal aim of CBIA, and that's California Building Industry Association, that's our major trade association here in California for home builders, we've been working very hard to revive the California housing sector through sponsoring new initiatives as well as making changes in the existing laws. I guess that guy didn't like my talk so far. And we're here to try to bring back our industry. And we have focused on a couple of things. In fact, I want to talk about 5 primary goals that we have done this year. First was to extend the expiring Subdivision Map Act, development fee reforms, solving the credit crunch, reducing the glut of unsold inventory due to foreclosures, and establishing and now extending the state and the federal home buyers tax credit. That's a lot to do, and not to mean that we'll get those all done at one time and we won't need help from other industries, we will. CBI sponsored legislation to extend the expiring subdivision maps to ensure steady and seamless housing recovery. With this extension, many viable housing projects would have to return to square one of the entitlement process. AB 333 was designed and signed by the governor, extending expiring subdivision maps for 2 additional years. And since the governor signed that bill by July 15th, the measure took effect immediately, keeping hundreds of expiring subdivision maps alive for another 24 months. CBIS also has pursued fee reform in response to runaway development impact fees that are imposing increasing business burdens on our business. With home prices dropping drastically, while impact fees have not changed by much, local jurisdictions remain constant. These fees have stayed consistent in local jurisdictions. The profit margin on a new home has been reduced so much that it makes the cost of building infeasible and has simply stopped many projects in their tracks. AB 1084 aims to tighten up this state's existing mitigation fee act to ensure that home builders are being charged a fair amount for the project's impacts. The bill is heading back to the Assembly for concurrence and will be sent to the governor later this year. In addition to sometimes exorbitant fees, the current credit crunch is making it hard for California home builders to get construction financing from institutional investors or lenders. CBIS supporting solutions contained in AB 1432, now a two-year bill, which will give the State Bank, California Housing Finance Agency, authorization to help those lenders and home builders get financing for the construction projects. To help reduce the inventory of unsold bank-owned homes, CBIS is also supporting AB 1529, a two-year bill proposing that California Housing Finance Agency, the agency I just mentioned, provide funding to purchase these homes. The intent for AB 1529 program is to couple with other state and federally programs like the Neighborhood Stabilization Program to repair and rehabilitate these homes. And most importantly, CBIA sponsored the State Homebuyer Tax Credit, which was enacted by legislation earlier this year, being effective on March 1st. The state credit was designed to provide incentive to homebuyers to purchase a new constructed home, and they were able to get a grant up to $10,000. The program set aside $100 million in funding and was intended to last through March of 2010. Almost immediately, including Young Homes, saw our traffic increase twofold. Our sales increased twofold by this credit. However, in a program that was so successful, the Franchise Tax Board reported a steady increase in applications for this credit, and the demand for the new credit continues to grow into May. It became apparent that the program was having the desired effect. It took a lot of the buyers off the fence and got them into our office and bought a home. However, the success of the program has done so well that the Franchise Tax Board has stopped the program in June because they have already allocated the $100 million. Also, on top of that, we had a federal tax home buyers credit program, which actually, as a home buyer, you could qualify for both if you met the income requirements and if for the state you bought a new home. The federal tax credit was up to $8,000 a year for the year, and that credit is going to end in November of this year. Many of my buyers who buy homes between about $280,000 to $300,000, and they're generally FHA home buyers, do qualify for both programs. So at CBIA, we are trying to get those programs extended. Through NHB, that's the National Association of Home Builders, we're lobbying the federal government to extend the federal credits for another year, and we're also trying to get the state of California to extend their state credits. It's kind of like the car industry. It works so well that we've run out of money. Now, there's another thing that's happening. I've always been in the first-time home buyer industry, and I've enjoyed that a lot. Our business has picked up because people can buy FHA. They have good FICO scores. They have a job. They have decent credit. And so we're seeing with the price decline, there's actually buyers that couldn't buy a few years ago that can buy today.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com. The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2009, 1M1 Properties, Appraisal Institute of Southern California, Awesome Limousines, Community Reinvest Group, Del Mey Properties, Elite Auctions, FarBelowMarket.com, the Inland Empire Investors Forum, Las Brisas Escrow, Los Angeles Meeting and Event Center, Mike Cantu, the Mortgage Equity Group, National Association of Real Estate Investors, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Realty Track, Saddleback Valley Communities, San Jose Real Estate Investor Association, Stars Photography, Tony Alvarez, and the Women's Council of Realtors Inland Valley Chapter.